Before we begin, let's take a few moments to put our hands together to worship the Supreme One, the Exalted One, the Discoverer, the Realizer, the Tathagata, by chanting the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. How is everyone today? Good. Another Saturday morning. We all come together to listen to the Buddha's Dhamma. And we do that every week, week after week. Weeks turn into months, months turn into years. And years will one day become decades. It won't be centuries. We'll be gone before that. And each time we come together to do the one thing. One very simple thing. Very simple, but yet very difficult. How can something be simple but be very, very difficult? Well, we all know what it's like to, you know, thread a needle. The task is simple. All you do is get the needle, put the thread into the eye of the needle. But we all know through experience how difficult that is. Now, I think one thing that seems to happen is the more we try to progress on our path, something that you all realize that what happens is not every day is a good day. Not every day is a good day. We have our good days and then we have our bad days. And whenever you go to your teachers and say, you know, teacher, my teacher, today I had a very good day. What does your teacher say? This too shall pass. Whenever you have a bad day, what do your teachers say? This too shall pass. Because whether you have a good day or a bad day, that is all to do with what? It's all to do with you. If you have a good day, you will have an amazing day. But if you wake up on the wrong side of the bed, you're going to have a bad day for the rest of the week. Is that how it works? Because it's something that, you know, every single day we will go through. You know, some days you'll end the day thinking, you know, today was a very successful day. I was able to do A, B, C, and D. And I spent this many hours contemplating. I was able to, you know, have a successful teacher's meeting where I was able to talk about the things I wanted to talk about, X, Y, and Z. So today was a very good day. And then other days you'll think, well, you know, I went to the Valley Mall, I went to contemplate, but I wasn't able to contemplate. You know, I missed this, I didn't do this, and, you know, today is a horrible day. You know, I wish I could tell, you know, today is not a good day for me. That's at the end of the day. But don't we also start the day thinking that as well? So you wake up, you say, you left your alarm on, right? The alarm rings, but you don't wake up. Then you immediately think, today, something's not right. Or as we started the sermon, the electricity went out. Today, today's sermon is not going to be a very successful sermon. We always look for a reason to say something. We always look for some sort of reason to say whether a day is going to be good or bad, or whether, you know, am I progressing on the path, or you know, pulling myself back. We always look for a reason. Now, what is a good day? What is a good day? How do you define a good day? A good day is if I'm able to contemplate, maybe listen to a sermon, do lots of meritorious activities. How do you define a good day? Because each and every one of us are unique. Unique in the way that, not that our minds work differently, but unique in the way that we have different knowledge and we have different views. Now, according to our views, according to our knowledge, we will have a different expectation of what a good day is. And as we feel this expectation, we feel, this day is a very good day. You know, I'm liking the day. If it doesn't feel the expectation, you think, today's a normal day, or today's a bad day. See, the day is always a day. I don't know, what day of the week has more than 24 hours? What day of the week has less than 24 hours? How do days, the way we define a day is 24 hours. Which day is a good day for a day? When the sun rises at exactly 6:25 and sets at 6:26, is that a good day for a day? No, a day for all nature is just what? A day. It's only you who decides whether it's a good or bad day. Only you who decides because of your expectation, of what you expected. If you have an expectation of what the day is supposed to be like, and you fulfill that expectation, now you're happy. But if you have an expectation that's not fulfilled, now what? You're upset. And yet you blame the day for it. And yet you blame the day for it. You don't blame it. When was the last time you blamed your expectation? It's because I'm expecting that, I have this expectation that today's a bad day. When do you blame your expectation? You don't. You think that what? Why am I having a bad day? Because of this, this, and this. And you're blaming. You're pointing your finger outside saying it's these sort of things. But in reality, it's your own. Is your expectation. So is today going to be a good day or a bad day? That's entirely up to you. Entirely up to what you expect. That's why when you come to realize that, what is a day? A day is 24 hours. What is 24 hours? 24 hours is how many minutes in an hour? 60. How many seconds are there in a minute? 60. But what is a second? A second is countless number of, 1,000 milliseconds. What is a millisecond? A lot of, many number of, countless numbers of minds. A day is just a feeling that we have. There was an experiment done long ago, back in, in the 19th century, where they sent a person down a cave, where they had no exposure to any sort of light. So they're in a cave, they close the door, and they just leave them there. And don't worry, they had the food, they had no contact with the outside world, but they had food, they had things to use to entertain themselves. Because they wanted to see, naturally, what sort of cycle do we have? And they find out that although our days are 24 hours, our internal cycles, our cardiac rhythm, our circadian rhythm, is only 25 hours. So our bodies work in 25 hours, every 25 hours. But the day is only 24 hours. How strange is that? So they let this person live and breathe in this cave. And this person will write down will mark down every time they had a meal. They'll mark down every time they brushed their teeth, every time they went to sleep. And when they came out, they looked and they saw that, yes, we do have a routine. Yes, we do have some sort of order in this chaos of time. But it's not 24 hours, but 25. Now here's the thing. We have defined 24 hours to be a day. It's not wrong. That is society. That's what we have used to define time. But what is a day? A day is a collection, a large collection, of singular minds. A day is a collection, a large collection of singular minds. So for us, actually, you know, we don't actually... When was the last time you experienced a whole day? When was the last time you experienced a whole day? Or do you only experience a single mind? You know, we spend far too long worrying about two things. About the past and about the future. Because every moment, what we do is we take everything and we put them together and we say, you know, this is a day. I had a good day yesterday, and tomorrow I'm going to have a bad day. Or, for example, let's say, something that we talked about last week, and I want to expand on that, is that let's say you're given the job to sweep, right? A very common job in the monastery, sweeping. Say you're given the job to sweep the Dhamma hall. All you're doing at a singular moment is what? Picking up the broom and having say one mind can only do one sweep. One swing of the hands. That's all it can do. That's all your mind can do at that moment. However, thanks to our good buddy, Jati comes and says, wait. Before you even start, Jati says, wait. You have all of this entire whole to do. Can you do it? Now, depending on the size of the hole, right? So if you took the Dhamma hole, you look at yourself, you look at the Dhamma hole. Me, Dhamma hole. Can I sweep the entire Dhamma hole? No. So what do? You go and ask, you know, I can't sweep the Dhamma hole all by myself. Can I have another 3 people, 4 people? Now you're asking for reinforcement because you think, I, Dhammo, that's impossible. It's going to take too much time. It's going to take so much effort. You know, I'm going to get halfway and I'm going to die of exhaustion. But in reality, all you have is just what? One sweep. How many sweeps? One. The next moment, another one. The next moment, another one. However, after you do 3, 4, 5, tiles, rows of tiles, you think what? I have swept these 4 rows of tiles. I have remaining another 46. 46 rows of tiles, and I've only done 4. How long has it taken me? It's taken me 10 minutes. And now you're doing the maths, and you're thinking, this is going to take too long. Again, All your mind can do is just one small thing at one moment, one sweep. However, you think what? No. I am sweeping, and I'm going to finish sweeping this entire thing, and it's going to take too long. Because we spend so way too long thinking about, you know, what has been and what will be, when actually you only have this very moment. For example, something that is very common amongst all human beings. Growing up, right, and even to this day, we have exams and you know, things that test us. I want you to go back in time to the last time you did an exam. Do you remember the amount of stress that you went through? You know, many days, maybe weeks before an exam. Many days or weeks before an exam. Why were we stressing? Because at this moment, right, let's say you have, 2 days before the exam. You're sitting at a table doing, you know, reading through your work, right? Knowing that in 2 days you have an exam. Why are you stressing? Because at this moment, where are you? At this moment, where are you? You're not studying. You're in the exam thinking, you know, I'm doing this exam. It's a very big exam. I'm going to be, you know, what happens if I'm not going to do well? And you're going through hundreds of scenarios in your mind, and therefore you're thinking, I can't do this. Oh, no, this is a lot of stress. I'm going to have to keep writing. You know, I have lots of things to do. When actually, all you can do at that moment is what? Say you're reading through an article. All you can do is do what? Read what? A page? Read what? A sentence. At a singular moment, what can you read? It's funny because I got to hear a beautiful story. How in our monastery, that last couple of days, or actually no, 3 weeks ago, in our Noble International School, our school in the monastery, we had our exam season, where we had exams. And of course, all of our 18 minus Anagarikas and Anagarikas are all revising very hard. Now, this is the blessing of the Dhamma. This is what the Dhamma, how the Dhamma has changed lives. Now, normally when you have 24 hours before an exam or 10 minutes before an exam, you know the feeling that you have, the stressful feeling, you know, you're flipping through all your books, trying to memorize every single detail because you only have 10 minutes left. One of our 18 minus Anagarikas, 10 minutes before an exam, just before or maybe an hour before the exam, when another person needed help, decided, you know, 10 minutes, in this 10 minutes, you know, I can try to revise. Something will stick, but my fellow Anagarika needs my help. So what should I do? I put it aside and help this person. Helps this person as quickly as I can and goes back to revising with very little stress, because they realize stress is because I'm not living in this moment. I'm living in the future. Thinking about what the future will hold. How the future will be, either good or bad. Now, do you remember, you know, now, so for most of you, you'll have this memory. For some of us, you know, you have to go back, far back, couple months, years maybe. Do you remember the last time you had organized a trip? You've organized a trip. Say, you know, you're gonna go to this place and this place and this place, and you organize a trip. The day before you go to this trip, how well do you sleep? Sleep like a log? You know, the moment your head hits the pillow, you go into the deepest sleep. Is that how it works? When you have you've organized a trip tomorrow, someone's organized a trip tomorrow, that night you can't sleep. That night is a very sleepless night, because why? Where are you? In bed, snuggled under a duvet, with your head on the pillow. But where's your mind? Tomorrow I've got this, I've got this, you know. Did we pack this? Did we pack that? And your mind is going through the entire, you know, list of things. Of what you're going to do, what you have done, and all of this. Living in the future. And therefore, you know, you can't go to sleep. Because you fail, because we don't realize that this is the future. That we're thinking about the future. But the only moment that we have is this moment. And so therefore, we put ourselves through such large amount of stress, such large amount of suffering, just because we at this moment project ourselves into the future and think, you know, this is what's going to happen in the future, or these are the things that's going to happen until that moment. This is the amount of things I have to do. I have to do this, 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 and this. And you are taking all of that, pushing them all, and fitting them into one mind, and now you're stressed. See, when you're reading a book, you can't read a book. I was talking to one of our 18 minuses the other day, and he's trying to learn English. And so one thing one of his teachers had told him to do is to read a book. So he brings me so the teacher's given him a pretty, you know, thick book. Now, this is a person who, you know, had learned English as his second language, right? Still learning. He finds it very difficult to read. And his teacher's given him a very thick book. And he comes to me and says, "Sorry, Nansa, how am I supposed to read this? You know, it's got how many? 300 pages. You know, there's so many words. How am I supposed to read such a big book?" When was the last time you read a book? When was the last time you read a book? You don't read books. What do you read? You read word by word. So I told him, don't read books. You know, it's a 300-page book. Don't read a book. Just for 5 minutes, read word by word. So what does he do? He reads word by word. After, I think, 2 months, he comes up to me and says, "Sorry, Nansa. You know, I read a 300-page book." I asked him, what was the story about? He said, in the beginning, I can't remember the story because he found it very difficult. So it'd be like, the boy went to the market. What's a market? Looks in the dictionary. But by the end of a 300-page book, he was able to read. Now, it's not because he was reading the entire book, but he was motivated to read a word by word. Because that's the only thing your mind can do, one small thing at a time. But what our mind likes to do is to, you know, likes to grab everything and say, you know, I have to do all of this. I have to do all of this, and I can't do that. I have to write this massive essay. I have to write this thesis. Which means what? I have to write this much. Actually, you're just writing a word at a time, a letter at a time, a stroke at a time. You're not writing 300,000 words. You're just writing a small stroke at a time. I mean, the English language is very, very interesting. Because of all our letters can be made with very simple strokes. Literally, all of our letters can be made with this, 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 and that. In different angles as well. I mean, there are some exceptions, but most of our letters can be made with this. So you're not writing words, sentences, paragraphs, stories. All you're doing is what? Taking one, and taking another, then taking another, then taking, well, but yeah, this one this way, take another, take this again. The came from where? The came from where? Did I write the? No, I took a stroke at a time. But yet Jati, yet our good friend Jati, it's a process. The process of Jati, or the process the process of separating things out and saying that these are all fixed things, creates this beautiful story saying that, you know, I wrote an entire 3,000 word thesis. Or 300,000 word thesis, that sounds more better. Eh? 300,000 word thesis. But all you can do is at a single moment just write a single stroke. You can only type a single letter. See, we spend way too long thinking about the future and thinking about the past. No, you know, every single time. Let's say you do something that, you know, right now you feel, you know, a bit ashamed about. You are feeling ashamed about something you've done in the past. It's gone, but yet you're feeling the shame. You're feeling the guilt. You're feeling embarrassed. You know, I think my mother was, also someone who liked doing this as well. It's whenever she got together with her friends. You know, she would try to find the most embarrassing story to tell them about me. You know, when my puta was this small, right? You know, he would do this and that and this and that. And would tell the most embarrassing story. And, you know, I remember whenever I heard this, I'd be like, Amma, why would you do that? You know, it's a random person that you just met. Why would you tell them an embarrassing story? They do that. But I'm suffering, not because of the story. I'm suffering because I think that that's something I used to do. Now I feel embarrassed. But that's the past. Do you feel sad, right? Or do you feel guilty or embarrassed if I tell you that yesterday we had a storm? Yesterday we had a storm. We didn't. In case anyone does feel guilty, right? Yes. Imagine yesterday we had a storm. We had a big storm, right? With big gale winds. You know, three of our roofs were ripped off. Do you feel guilty? Why don't you feel guilty? You should feel guilty, shouldn't you? Three roofs were ripped off the building. Shouldn't you feel guilty? You don't feel guilty because why? You don't think that you did it. Because you realize that it wasn't me. I should only feel guilty of things that I have done. Why should I be guilty of something that nature has done? Well, if that is so, aren't you nature's works? Let's say you fell down in front of a massive audience of, say, 2,000 people. You fell down on stage. That wasn't you. That wasn't your fault. That was nature's work. The causes have aligned. There was, you know, the carpet was slippery. You tripped over your own foot, and therefore you fell. So if you don't feel embarrassed about the or guilty about, you know, yesterday's storm, why are you guilty about something that happened yesterday? Why are you embarrassed about something that happened yesterday? You know, causes have aligned for the effect to happen. It's not you. See, if you really think about it, what is it that you can actually, what can you actually be guilty about? What is it that you can actually be guilty about? The only thing you can be guilty about is the feeling that you are the one, or the only thing you can be embarrassed about is the feeling that you are the one who feels embarrassed. That's what you should be embarrassed about. For example, if I told you to look at the word the, everyone look at the word the, are you actually looking or are your eyes seeing? Are you actually looking or are your eyes seeing? And is your brain perceiving? You can't look. What can you do? All that can happen is your eyes can be right, can be pointed to, or pointed, can be turned, that's a better word, turned to the word the, and therefore you are seeing. You can't look. For example, look at the word the. Come on. Try looking at the word the. Can you look at it now? Because what is seeing? Seeing is when the causes align that the effect manifests. If I cover the word the, can you see it? Let's say I have some sort of magic that when I take this fan down, the the changes. So when I'm covering this, you can't see. So what can you actually look? Or are you just seeing? Seeing meaning a process of seeing. When the eye, or when light shines, reflects, and enters your eye, goes through the optic nerves, goes to the brain. The brain interprets it, sends it to the mind perceives it and says, the word the. That's what's happening. You can't look. You can only see. You can't listen. You can only hear. Because can you control what you hear? Can you control what you hear? Well, very simply, you can say, well, if I don't want to hear something, I can just close my ears, can't I? But what are you actually doing? You're just changing the causes. All you're doing is you're changing the causes. So hearing cannot happen. So you can't listen. You can only hear. See, this is very interesting. Because we feel, sometimes, we feel embarrassed about something that's happened. But really, what is happening is causes are aligning for something to, for an effect to manifest. For example, let's take the example of falling in front of a large audience. You are not the person who controlled that. What happens is that the causes align in such a way that the effect manifests that you fell over. So technically, you shouldn't be the one who's embarrassed. Who should be embarrassed? The causes. You shouldn't be embarrassed because it's not you who did that. It was the causes. What about, let's say you're given a chance to give a speech in front of, say, a large audience. And let's say you stutter, you stumble, and you say something, and you realize what you said was wrong. Very common mistake, right? You've all been there, right? When you've prepared something and you get on stage and you say something and it's not the thing that you wanted to say, and it, because you made a mistake, or, you know, there's a spelling mistake in your cue cards or whatnot. Now, whose fault is that? Who's to blame? No, the causes aligned in such a way that that's the effect. So, this is not saying that you take no responsibility. This is the thing, like, I don't want you to come to this idea, well, that means I can do anything and not take any responsibility. I have, you know, I'm going to throw this at someone, but it's not my fault. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm talking about the idea that, you know, when something happens, that's entirely yours, that you are to blame in the past. Instead, causes have aligned. So, for example, if I wanted to throw this at someone, I can only throw it if the causes have aligned. For example, if I had no pen, can I throw it at someone? If there was no one here, can I throw it at someone? If my hand wasn't working, I'd broken my arm. Can I now throw it at someone? Just because you have the idea doesn't mean you can do something. Just because you have the idea doesn't mean you can do something. You have to put the causes together. Take A, B, C, and D, and E, and F, and put them all together for the effect to happen. This is why something that we talked about last week as well, and the week before, is that our karma or our vipaka gives rise to thoughts. However, you're not just a machine that just lets vipaka just flow through you. So it is not just, you know, you're an actor on a stage reading from the script. No, you have to do something. Because when a thought goes through the mind, there has to be, there is, because the mind can alter the energy of the vipaka. This is what we call karma. For example, remember last time you lied? Your teacher tells you to do something, right? Or someone tells you to do something, and you forgot about it completely. And so what do you do? What do we do? We give that small, you know, the white lie and say, you know, I did that. But I felt, you know, I remember I once had a teacher she was a very good teacher, but I didn't like doing her homework. She'd give like lots of homework. So I remember what I used to do is whenever she asked for the homework, I would give very beautiful excuses to cover it up. Where's your homework? You know, miss, I left it in the car. You know, if I phone my father, you know, I'm pretty sure he can bring it. So it sounds very legit, like very legitimate. You know, I can phone my father and he can bring it. And she's like, oh, no, you can bring it to me next week. So it's like, oh, I'll bring it to you next week, Mikumis. And because I know that next week she'll give me more homework, forget about last week's homework, and we continue from there. You know, we lie to cover something up. We lie to protect something. I mean, when it comes to giving excuses, I think we all have experience. You know, we've all been through school, we've all done a job, right? And we all know what it feels like, you know, when you're given something to do, when you haven't done it, and you have something to protect. the mind will automatically come up with a lie. You know how sometimes you lie without thinking? You know, some of us have very good ability to lie without thinking. That almost you believe in your own lie. Because when you have something to protect, your mind automatically comes up with a lie. To say something to protect this, whether it's your job, whether it's, you know, your status or your relationship with someone, or even the very idea that you're a good, responsible person, you come up with a lie. Or you come up with a way to brush a problem under the carpet. So, you know, when someone's blaming you, the next thing you do is say, oh, yes, I understand. How are the children? Changing the subject so you can brush the problem under the carpet. Because you have something to protect. You see, everything in nature has a reason. And you yourself is also what? Part of nature. That's why, you know, everything you do has a reason. So if I asked you, why did you wake up in the morning? You have a reason. Why did you brush your teeth? You have a reason. Because you yourself is part of nature. You yourself is part of this idea of cause and effect. Only when the causes come together do you have the effect. So coming back to the word the, you can only see the word the because the causes have aligned. See, with one symbol or with two strokes, I can change your perception of the. Where did the go? Now you're perceiving they, because now the causes are different. Is the word the and they the same? Are they the same? No, because now the causes have aligned in a different way to give a different effect. Now the causes align a different way to give you a completely different effect. The, they, hey, three different words made from almost the same letters. Now, where did the go? Where did the go? The went where? You know, it went back into the dictionary. You know, you did see the like come off the board and go into a dictionary and say, I'm going to live here for the rest of my life. Where did the go? There is also what? An effect. So again, you aren't the one who is seeing this. Instead, the causes are aligning for seeing to happen. Only when H, E, and Y come together. For example, let's just change this. Did I write hey? H is there, E is there, Y is there. Is anyone reading hey? Only when H, E, Y are put together, when the causes are put together, do you have the effect. If the causes aren't there, then you cannot, the effect cannot manifest. The effect cannot appear. So, who is embarrassed? Or to be embarrassed, there is something that we always trying to protect. This, you know, I am the one there is this ego that we have to protect. This is why we feel embarrassed. Ego. This ego is what is there. And therefore, when I fall down in front of people, I am embarrassed because I fell. When actually what's happened? I'm feeling embarrassed because the cause is aligned to create the effect of what? Falling? No, because when you realize when the cause is aligned, there's an effect. I has nothing to do with that. I am completely innocent here. Instead, it's the causes. So who's feeling embarrassed? I'm feeling embarrassed because of yesterday's storm. I'm feeling embarrassed because of, I'm feeling sad about something that, about yesterday's storm. I should have done that. No, really, nature took its path. Nature will always take its path, whether you like it or not. For example, these lights are on because you want it to be on. Who here can control the lights? Well, you can very well say, you know, I can go to the light switch, the switches, and turn them off. But let's say we have a power cut. Lights go off. Let's say, you know, the bulbs are faulty. Lights go off. Let's say the switch is faulty. The light can be on. So, who controls them? Who can control the lights? Who is the controller of light? No, when the causes come, when the causes align, does the effect manifest? When the causes align, does the effect manifest? Not because I want the light to be on or I want the light to be off. Because I want does what? I expect this, I expect that. Only does one thing and one thing only. Creates a fire within. Creates this build-up of pressure within. I want this. Just because you want doesn't mean you get things immediately. You know, I say, I want that speaker. Just because I want doesn't mean I get it, does it? No, the moment I want something, and now, until I get the speaker, what am I feeling? What am I feeling? An intense amount of pressure build up. Again, it's not because of what? Not because of the speaker, but because of this feeling of, I want. Now, can you get the speaker just because you want? Can you eat chocolate just because you want? Can you? I want, and chocolate just falls from the sky into your hands and you start eating. Is that how it works? I don't know. Do we live in an instant, instant delivery, the moment I want something, it falls into my hand. Is that how it works? No, you can only eat chocolate if the cause is aligned. What's that? If there's chocolate at home, or if you're near a shop, if you have enough money to buy from the shop. If only these causes align, can we manifest the effect? This is why it's very, you know, this is why, you know, we began with by talking about this as well. What are you doing? What is it that you are doing there? Let's take the situation that you want to eat chocolate. Let's take, right? I want to eat chocolate. Now, just because you want to eat chocolate, chocolate doesn't appear. So what do you have to do? You have to... Now, Just because of this idea. Oh, if you think about this, where did this idea come from? Where does this idea come from? Now, this is also very interesting. The ideas that you have actually come from somewhere. Something has to trigger it. When was the last time you just, you know, sat there and a random, you know, the idea, you know, chocolate, I want to eat chocolate, just pops up. No, there has to be something that triggers it. Either, you know, you get the smell of chocolate, or you have this idea that, you know, when you feel alone, that chocolate is a very good way to satisfy that, the feeling, or you know, the craving comes from somewhere. Something triggers it. When it is triggered, you get the idea. The idea of chocolate comes. Now, because of our mind, so the mind arises, the mind passes. However, the mind has what? Ignorance and attachment. When the mind has ignorance and attachment, it comes up the end with jati, and jati says, I want chocolate. Now, like I said, the moment you want chocolate, chocolate doesn't appear. Now the mind has to do something for this to happen. So what does it do? See, the mind that wants it, so let's just draw it like this. Take a different color. The mind, I want chocolate, arise and passed. When it passed with this idea that chocolate, I need that chocolate, of the idea of I want chocolate. Therefore, it creates the environment for what? The next mind. So for example, if the next mind was to say that, you know, the next mind will arise with the instruction to do what? To go get chocolate. However, can your mind go and get chocolate? So what does it do? It sends a signal to the body that says what? Take the next step. Take a step. So right now I'm taking the mind to be, you know, something that can perceive a big idea. But the mind is something that's very minuscule, very minute, that can perceive that is only a fraction of a second. But for this example, I'm expanding that and saying the mind can do more than that. So the idea, I want chocolate. When the mind passes, it gives the conditions for the next mind to arise, receiving the chocolate. Meaning, the next mind will take... a step forward. Now, how does the mind know it took a step forward? So, this mind wants. This mind then sends a signal to step forward. How does the mind know it took a step forward? Using its senses. It can see. It can hear. It can feel. Not say, you know, just not one step forward, but say several steps forward. Opens the cupboard. Right? That is also what? Another mind. How does it know it opened the cupboard? Again, through its six senses, it will take in the stimulus that makes it perceive that the cupboard has been opened. Let's say there is chocolate there. The mind perceives that it grabbed chocolate. Next he perceives, he put it into his mouth. And finally, final. Finally, it perceives that it tastes chocolate. That it ate chocolate. Now, here's the thing. Only off this mind, when this mind arose that I want to eat chocolate, at the end of this mind, it creates the environment for the next mind to arise. Which creates the environment for the next mind to arise. Which creates the environment for the next mind to arise. Which creates the environment for the next, for the next, for the next, for the next. So, for you to eat chocolate, is it just a one thing? One simple, I want chocolate, I eat chocolate. No, all these causes have to align for that to be there. And it's not just one mind. Several minds. In reality, several billions, trillions of minds will pass before you actually taste it. So it's very strange. One mind wants, one mind gets. One mind wants, one mind gets. And these are the ones in the middle, they just follow orders. The mind that received wasn't the mind that wanted. Almost as good, because each of these minds are discrete. There they are, and they're not. They are just there to perceive. So let's say it's almost as if I wanted to eat chocolate, and then someone in the back ate chocolate. This is why you are never satisfied. This is why no matter how much, you're not going to be satisfied, because the one that wants isn't the one that eats, that tastes. Instead, it's a completely separate mind. However, because of jati anyway, because of this idea or this process of separation, what happens is you put these all together and think that I'm the one who did all this. I'm the one who did all of this. And because it feels that I did it, it takes all of this and puts them together. And while each and every one of these are happening, vexation is there. Vexation increases at every step. That's why, you know, let's say you wanted chocolate. Instead of having chocolate in the cupboard, you had to go all the way to a shop. You had to, let's take something that's not chocolate. Let's say, you know, let's take chocolate. Chocolate's easy, right? We all like chocolate, right? You had to go to the shop, or you had to go all the way to the shop to buy it. Now, taking every step you take, are you happy? Are you joyful? No, every step is filled with this idea that, you know, I'm going to have chocolate. I'm going to have chocolate. I'm going to have chocolate. There's this massive pressure that builds up. This massive vexation that builds. And therefore, when you taste it, this mind, when it tastes it, jati is able to feel that it tasted it. And it connects this one to that one and says, you finally got what you wanted. And it feels, huh, great, finally. And then this mind feels pleasure. That mind feels pleasure. Not because of eating chocolate, because this process of jati, right? Or this process of separation, this process of putting these all together says, the one who wanted, received. Therefore, you got what you wanted. Be happy. Be happy. And therefore, there's pleasure. But actually, this mind and that mind and are two separate minds with many, many minds in between. That's why, you know, you feel happy or you feel more pleasure when you have to work hard for something. When you have to work hard for something and you receive it, you feel more pleasure. For example, let's say, you know when you had to work hard for an exam and you got a good result, you feel really happy. Not because of the result, but because of the working hard. Because of all the minds that had to be under all that pressure, all that vexation, therefore can be relieved for you to feel, wow, I was at that, you know, I did really well in that test. Not because of this. Not because of eating the chocolate. You know, when we started, we talked about, you know, how we connect the past and the future. At this moment, we connect the past. And at this moment, we also connect the future. I like this chocolate. Therefore, I want more of this chocolate. That's why one is not enough. That's why one small chocolate is not enough. We want what? More. We want more. You know, after this, now, you know, let's say you normally had a small bit of chocolate. After this, you know, this mind, because of the pleasure, projects into the future and thinks, if I had more chocolate, I'm going to be more happy. That's a projection the mind makes. The mind connects the past and the future and projects it. The past and the present and projects it into the future and thinks, this is what's going to make me happy. This is what's going to make me happy. More chocolate. Because we fail to realize that this, the pleasure we feel isn't because of the chocolate. It's because of this. All the pressure that builds up after this moment that gives rise to that effect of pleasure. For example, if you don't like chocolate, will you feel pleasure at this moment? Technically, if you don't like chocolate, will you go through all of this? Will you put yourself through all of this if you don't like chocolate? So it's not chocolate that brings pleasure, is it? There, so someone who doesn't like chocolate, when they eat chocolate, they don't project it into the future and say, you know, if I had more chocolate, I'll be more happy. Because none of this is there. None of those, there's no pressure buildup. No pressure buildup meaning no pleasure. Because pleasure is only the buildup of what? Pleasure can only be experienced if there is a buildup of what? Pressure. The more the pressure that we feel, the more the pleasure we feel. That's why if this process was more complicated and more long, the amount of pleasure we feel at this moment is what? Greater. You see, this is what we have to do. All we have to do is we don't need to do anything about this process. We don't need to do anything about this process. Because this is a process. All we have to do is simply just understand this, that this is the process at play. We have to understand the true nature of pleasure. Because still to this day, we all have something that gives us pleasure. This is the thing, you know. This is not saying, you know, anything that gives you pleasure, don't have. You know, chocolate, you like chocolate, don't have chocolate because you have to go through all this pain for chocolate. This is not what I'm saying. You know, if you like something, I'm not telling you not to have it. Instead, have it while understanding the process at play. Have it while understanding that this is what's happening in my mind. This is what's happening in my mind that these separate minds are arising and passing away, giving rise to this feeling of vexation, this feeling of pressure, which is believed. Because if you really do understand that, now you can still eat chocolate, but the pressure buildup won't be there. Because you realize the what? It's a process. You realize it's just a process. That it's just a process. That is the key thing, the key doctrine that the Buddha talks about. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Well, the word anicca is basically, if you give a synonym, it's basically a process. Talking about a process. Because cause and effect is what? A process. There is no fixed entity here. There is no fixed, you know, one single thing here. Because after you eat chocolate, the mind doesn't stop there. The mental process will continue. Will continue to go forwards. You see, that's the thing, you know, we don't want to stop. We just want to understand. Because when you understand, you're no longer in ignorance. Instead, you realize. You come to realize what is really happening. Because we don't want to stop this. What we're trying to do is we're trying to realize what is happening. Because when you realize it's not chocolate that's giving me pleasure, then this idea starts to diminish. I want chocolate. Will start to reduce. Because you only want chocolate because you think chocolate's what's making you happy. You only want chocolate because you think chocolate's what's making you happy. You only want money if you think money is what's making you happy. But when you realize, no, it's this relief at play. Relief from this pressure from within. Then this idea that I want this, I expect this, starts to vanish. And now you're able to accept nature for what it truly is. Now you're able to eat chocolate properly. If not, you can't eat chocolate properly, can you? Because every time you eat chocolate, you're not eating the chocolate that's in front of you. You're comparing it with what? Is this the same chocolate that I ate before? Does it taste the same? If it tastes the same as the chocolate I ate before, I'm happy. If it tastes better than chocolate I tasted before, I'm extremely happy. If it tastes worse, don't like this chocolate. I remember growing up, I used to really not like the chocolate in Sri Lanka. Because you come and taste it and you think, this is not chocolate. This is something else. Because why? I have an expectation. So I can't eat the chocolate properly. I can't enjoy chocolate. Because what am I doing? I'm comparing it with what? You know, what is chocolate supposed to taste like? What is chocolate supposed to taste like? It's supposed to taste, let's say, velvety. It's supposed to melt in your mouth. I don't know. What is chocolate? It's supposed to be sweet. And therefore, you have this expectation because you think that is what's going to give you the pleasure. At the end, when you taste it, and you realize it's not the same, or you realize it is the same, or you realize it's even better. Now, because every time you're comparing, you live to compare. Your mind is always comparing. Think about it. What do you do every morning in front of the mirror? What do you do every morning in front of the mirror? Compare. Do I look better than I looked yesterday? Do I look the same? Do I look worse? If I look worse, I have to do something to make it look better. Let's try some different hairstyle to see if I look better now. Let's put this, let's put that. Yeah. This is why, you know, many people, you know, looking in the mirror is one of the worst things they can do. Because they come up and they say, oh, I have a new wrinkle here. You know, I have gray hair coming now. Because you're comparing with what? You're comparing. You can't enjoy the image you see because you're comparing. So if you like chocolate, if you want to experience real chocolate, you have to get rid of this idea of comparing. Then can you only truly experience chocolate? You can't watch a film. You can't watch a film. Because while you're watching a film, you're comparing. Comparing with what? What you think should happen. What you want to happen. You're comparing with that. And therefore, you are actually not watching the film that the best director has made. Instead, you're watching the one that you think you want to watch. That you think that is the best one. And comparing it with it. You can't associate your spouse. You can't associate your friend. You can't associate, your best friend, you can't associate them. Because who are you actually associating? In the mind, you have created the idea of a friend. Who is a friend? Again, for each and every one of us, the answer is different. Each and every one of us has an idea of what a friend should really be, or what a spouse should really be, or what a child should be, what a parent should be. And every moment you meet this person, you're not enjoying their company. Instead, you're comparing. You're saying, this person is giving me chocolate. I like this person. This person is calling me by a good nickname. I like this person. This person is calling me by a bad nickname. It's giving me a terrible nickname. Don't like this person. This person is appreciating me. I like this person. And you have this mental image of a friend that you compare with. That's why you fall out with friends. That's why your attachment to friends may be stronger or become weaker because of this idea of what a friend should be. You can't associate your friend properly for who they truly are. I remember, back in schools and growing up, people would tell you, if your friend can't accept who you are, they're not a friend. Well, unfortunately, you don't accept who they are either. Because you're accepting who you want to accept. That this is who a friend should be. And now you're comparing. Ah, yes, they're doing what I want. They're doing what I expect. They're a friend. They're doing what I'm not expecting. Don't like them. So if you truly want to taste chocolate, if you truly want to, have a friend, a true friend, we have to get rid of this idea, this mental image. If you want to experience, the best beach, you have to get rid of that mental image of a beach. Because if you start comparing, you're not enjoying the beach. You're enjoying the idea of comparing it with the beach that you're seeing. Because the beach that you want to see, where is that beach? the beach that you want to see, where is that beach? So if I asked you to draw your ideal beach, what would you draw? You know, golden sand, crystal clear water. You know, the waves can't be too big, but there can't be no waves. It has to be some sort of waves, or it's not a beach. There has to be a palm tree on the side. In the distance, there has to be seagulls. But there can't be seagulls on the beach. No. They have to be in the distance. You have to hear them cry in the distance. You know, it can't be cold. It has to be warm. I mean, not too hot, not too cold. Has to be just right. Reminds me of Goldilocks, right? Can't be too hot, can't be too cold. Has to be just right. Where is this ideal beach? You see images of beaches and you say, oh, that's what a beach should look like. And it's almost like as though you're taking every time you see a beach, a picture, or even just hear about a beach, you take all that, you cut them up, and you take all the bits, the good bits and pieces, put them together. I mean, that's why it's really funny that some people, you know, cameras can capture things in a completely different way. Cameras can capture things in a completely different way. I remember one of my friends, they showed me a photo long ago of a beautiful building. Right? So the picture is of a reflection of a building, of a beautiful building. And it looked absolutely amazing. And I remember, you know, because of that picture, going to the place and looking at it and thinking, the picture, the thing, picture, thing. And I asked him, where do you take the picture from? He said, it rained the day before and there was a big muddy puddle. And he took the picture from the muddy puddle and created a completely different image. And it's even better because, you know, nowadays you can edit things. Right? Before when we had black and white cameras with reels, you can't really edit things. But nowadays, you know, it's all digital. All you have to do is, you know, put it online and you have different websites and softwares and whatnot. Then you edit things and change colors and make it look absolutely amazing. This is why, you know, because of social media, we all have very unrealistic expectations. You look at a beach and you think the water has to be, you know, this pure blue color. The person who took the photo, you know, had colored in a good blue. This is why you can never experience a beach. You can only compare with your beach in your mind because you have this idea that this is what a perfect beach should look like. You have the idea, this is what a perfect cake should taste like. It can't have too much icing, but it has to have some sort of icing. It can't be too sweet, can't be too sour. And you have this Goldilocks sort of mindset. You've all heard the story of Goldilocks, right? You know, she went into the forest, went to the house, you know, house of the three bears, sat on one chair and said, this chair is too hard, this chair is too soft, this chair is just right. This porridge is too hot, this porridge is too cold, this porridge is just right. This bed is too big, this bed is too small, this bed is just right. And, you know, we have this Goldilocks mindset because we have this idea, this is what perfect looks like. And we continue to look for perfect. We continue to look for this idea of perfect. What is perfect? What is perfect? You know, I think they did a survey a couple years back, maybe, of what is a perfect person? Who is a perfect person? And they did a survey and they got people to answer what does a perfect person look like? And got a large amount of data, put them together, and they generated an image of a perfect person. For example, the perfect person has to be X tall, has to look like this, look like that, has to have this, have to have that. And they generated a picture of a perfect person and asked them, is this a perfect person? Said? No. It's not perfect. Because what is perfect? Because you are always looking for the perfect place, the perfect person, the perfect thing. What is perfect? What is perfect? Everything. Everything is perfect. Because everything is perfect, because everything is all the effect of causes. Therefore, it's perfect. It's the best in its best possible way. But you aren't able to accept it because of this idea. You aren't able to accept the perfectness of everything because of this idea. You know, I want this, I want that, I expect this, I expect that. So you can't see the perfectness. If this wasn't there, everything you see, you realize to be perfect. Everything you see, you realize to be perfect because it is perfect. It is the effect of causes. They say nature is beautiful. They say nature is beautiful. Can you truly see the beauty of nature? You know, well, that's why we like flowers and nature and trees and whatnot, because we have this idea that nature is beautiful. But you know, although flowers are beautiful, this is also what? Part of nature. This is also perfect in its own way. This is also what? Perfect in its own way. All we have to do is understand the nature of nature. All we have to do is get rid of this idea. All we have to do is, you know, once you have this idea, the pleasure or the vexation you feel is not something under your control. You can't control your vexation. You can't control, you know, you can't control how, you know, what happens after this. All we can do is stop this from happening. To enjoy the world for what it truly is. And to do that, all you have to do is understand. Understand this process. Because once you understand the process, now no longer chocolate. You understand that chocolate is not what makes or is what gives you pleasure. Therefore, this idea now reduces. Because this is a mental game. Physically, we don't need to do anything. It's a mental game. All we have to do is understand. When you understand the first view, this view that you have reduces. Therefore, this process, this build-up of vexation, this build-up of pressure will reduce. And therefore, this is no longer... You no longer eat chocolate with the expectation of what chocolate should taste like. You're able to enjoy chocolate for what it truly is. You're able to enjoy, you know, enjoy life what it truly is, because you have no, you know, you're not comparing yourself with other people. Because don't we do that so often? We do that so much. You look at, you know, who I should be, and now compare yourself, and you feel so, you know, downfallen. You know, I should be like this, I should be like that, I should be like this. Because we can't accept us for who we are. So ladies and gentlemen, all we have to do is understand. Now, like I said, the journey to Nirvana is not easy. The journey of understanding is not easy. It's simple, but difficult. Like threading a needle. All you do is understand. But the process of understanding is not easy, because you're doing something that you've never done in your entire life. You've never questioned why. You never asked yourself how. So what you are doing is going against what you normally do. This is why, you know, we have to, you know, what we're doing is difficult. What we're doing is difficult. Simple in theory, but through when we put it through our lamp of life, it is very difficult. That's why. Is today going to be a good day or a bad day? Is today going to be a good day or a bad day? No, today is going to be a day. Today is going to be a day. You choose whether it's going to be a good day or a bad day. It's in your hands. If you no longer compare, that means every day is a good day. If you no longer expect, every day is a good day. If you realize that everything is cause and effect, every day is a good day. So keep that in mind and practice. All we have to do is understand. Nothing physical. All we have to do is just understand. Understand the nature of nature. And when that happens, you are completely free. Free from, you know, free from stress, free from strains, free from, you know, this mental discomfort that we always face. You know, sadness, sorrow, fear, grief, lamentation. Because all that needs to disappear is this. Okay. So apply. Apply and apply and apply. You know, this may seem to be, you know, the more you apply, the more it makes sense. Because this is what's happening through your mind every single day. This is how your mind works at every moment. So the more you apply, the more you put it into your own life, the more you're able to see the world for what it truly is. You know, It's our duty to understand ourselves. It's our duty to understand ourselves. You know, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I like what I'm like? Because only when we understand ourselves are we able to free ourselves from our own inner boundaries. Our own defilements. So understand, you know, put this into practice. Like I said, you know, we come here every Saturday, listen to a sermon, and we all leave. You know, this is why, you know, our teachers will continue to tell us, you know, don't make this a weekly, you know, thing that we always go, and this is just a part of my normal routine. Your routine should be understanding. Your routine should be putting it into practice. You know, change your lives slowly. Try to contemplate. Try to change the way your timetable, so you can find, you know, things to trigger you to contemplate. Don't let a moment go by that you're not contemplating, that you're not thinking about the reality of nature. So please do, if you find time, no choice, but those of you who do have a choice, please do come, right? And because in this day and age, where day by day, what we're seeing in this world is people are becoming more, you know, looking towards not about helping others, but becoming more and more selfish. Because, you know, something that I like doing is I like listening to stories of the past, right? And what you hear is how a community used to be, how well people used to, you know, help one another, to uplift one another, to do things with each other. But day by day, as, you know, as we advance as humanity, we're becoming more and more, you know, this is me, these are mine, you know, I'm not going to look and take care of others. But when we do dakine, what I always love seeing is how everyone works together, right? Especially poi days, when we have, you know, sometimes several thousand people come together to do one thing, to have, you know, to help one another, to do as much merit as they possibly can, giving and helping. It is an absolute beautiful sight. And especially to see, you know, a hundred monks, more than 100 monks, you know, going in a procession, followed by with our noble hearts, followed by our anagarikas, anagarikas. You know, it's a very rare sight. You know, these are, you can almost call them soldiers in war with their own defilements, understanding who they truly are. So, you know, I do, if you do, recommend for everyone to come and join in and witness it. Witness and rejoice. Because it's an absolute special time. Special in Poya. And I think this Poya is Binwar Poya. And that's also a very special special time for the Buddha Sasana as well. If I remember correctly, this is that was a day that the Lord Buddha had let the Bhikkhuni Sasana start. So it is always, you know, it's a very, very special time, dakine is. So it's, you know, it's always in place. It's an open invitation to everyone. So please do come and rejoice in the merits that you can do. And also today at 12:30 or 12, we have the discussions. We have 12 in this premises or the hospital? Here? So at 12:30 we have individual discussions or group discussions in the library premises. Again, invitation to all to come join and converse in them and try to, you know, find ways to put it into our lives. It's always very good to see, you know, bhikkhu bhikkhuni, upaskas upaskas all come together. You know, in the future, as more and more of us are understanding and applying Dhamma, you know, it's a very beautiful sight to see so many people coming together to do, you know, the same thing, their own salvation. You know, I get told that, you know, today, you know, we have X amount, or we're growing, you know, the number of Sita Shravikas, Shravikas. And all I can see is like, is the number of people who are striving, who are no longer thinking about themselves, as in how much I can get for myself, more thinking how much can I understand about myself, as well as help other people. Those number of people are increasing. And it's really nice to see that. So who knows what the future holds. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits we have acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Navajapa gem, chanting Pirith, listening to Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer our merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all the three prelates of all the chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the benefit of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, through thick and thin, come rain or shine. This is also taking a moment to transfer merits to Guru Sananse, as well as all the other monks resident at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. This is also taking a moment to transfer merits in special gratitude to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be it thereby translated some and sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of the merits, if any have been born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. As all team one transfer merits to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, alms, rules, medicines, as well as those who pass in the no hacks and their well wishes. May to the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It's also taking a moment to transfer merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, our nephews, nieces, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of the merits, may they be healed of any physical mental ailments. May they overcome any obstacles in spiritual progress. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also taking a moment to transfer merits to Devas, Brahmas, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadeva, as well as numerous gods and deities who committed to protect and fulfill the Sambhasasana. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There's also taking a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, who have predeceased us, to all that has been friends and family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the forces, as well as the police force. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to the forces of the police force, who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in the war with a friend or foe rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends of family to us in this even long journey in Sansara. May the power of the merits, if anyone have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, as all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits we acquire throughout the day, we win a witness he went to many hundreds of thousands of Arathinvanses, Arathmahinvanses in this blessed land itself. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired throughout the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success become Arathinvanses or Arahat Mahinwan say, in his very life, in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Rupa Chupa be with you all. Raga ginnen mitetnva Dvesha ginnen mitetnva Moha ginnen mitetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Nivan sepa labeva Tunwange Susyananta Mahagunibalin Sri Loka Sri Satyoma Nibbana Pramisakin Sukhita Rata.